You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for September 26, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the U.S. Senate's Chubby Chaser Tinder page, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Ew. The U.S. Senate is ew.
It is so ew. You know, they say you don't want to see the sausage being made. I don't want to see the sausage fondled.
I don't care if it was Daniel Inouye.
No.
Or who was the other guy that they were talking about on Morning Joe?
Strom Thurmond. Yeah, yeah.
Who apparently was a famous butt pincher. Okay. These guys need to retire. I mean, I know that both of them are dead. May they rest in peace. But
It's like a worst game of Clue ever.
Ever.
Know? Yeah.
Ever.
It was okay. Senator Inouye in the library with a hand on the ass.
No, it wasn't.
No.
It was Senator Thurmond in the Senate elevator with Micah Brzezinski.
don't want that image in my head ever. And really, you know, this is just, I know how privileged and imperial and Roman the Senate really is. But Jesus Christ, guys, you know, first of all, it's time for a bunch of you to retire.
It is. Yep.
It's time, appalling to me.
And I mean that with all due respect.
Yep. All due respect. But
we have 39 senators over 65. The youngest of these is Elizabeth Warren, you know, who's like 65 and 4 days old or something. You know, Zeke Emanuel has a really good article out about wanting to die at 75. Now, I want to get into this because this is a really, really good article.
Okay.
It's in the Atlantic, and he has said, and I mourn with him, that the Atlantic Monthly wrote the headline for the, you know, it's hit bait. They called it Why I Hope to Die at 75. That was not his headline for the article. His article is about him making decisions about his future, the health care that he will receive, the choice that he is making that at 75, he's going to stop having cancer tests. He's going to stop trying to prolong his life further through extreme measures. And it's a political article. It's an article about how distinctly American it is that we all seem to feel, including many members of the United States Senate.
Yeah.
Like, we will live to a very, very old age and be completely healthy right up until the last minute and then die in a ski accident. You know, when the actual fact is, yes, we're all living longer because cholesterol reducing drugs are there and there are all kinds of therapies and treatments that allow our bodies to live longer.
Yeah.
But that does not mean quality of life is being extended and that we're all healthier longer. That is absolutely not true. And he's saying that once you reach 75, if you start failing,
right,
and you get cancer or you have, God forbid, you have a stroke or a series of mini strokes, your quality of life goes down the crapper really fast.
Very fast.
Mm-hmm. And the medical industrial complex can keep you alive for a lot longer than you may want to be.
Uh-huh.
And it is expensive. It is painful.
Mm-hmm.
It is not what a lot of people want.
Yep.
And the point is, he is, I think, laying out an example.
As a medical doctor. This is Rahm Emanuel's brother.
Right. Who is also an advisor on ACA. So that means, you know, this is all about death panels now.
Right.
Because people have just read the title that was written by some intern at the Atlantic, SEO at the Atlantic, to get hits rather than read the whole article, and it is long, and I read the whole thing, and I'm telling you, don't make this a too long, didn't read article. Read it, because it is worth having this conversation. It's worth thinking about what you want to do and then taking action. And there was also an editorial this week in the Chicago Sun-Times about we as a nation need to start making these decisions. That editorial has a link. I'll link these up at our Facebook page and with the podcast notes. There's a link to power of attorney forms that you can look at the Chicago Sun-Times editorial that came out this week. Just living consciously and making decisions about what you want makes it easier on your family, makes it easier on yourself. And this editorial pointed out that in 2011, something like $545 billion was spent on Medicare. And 28% of that was spent on the last 6 months of someone's life to try to keep them alive. And that is done, that the medical community reflexively moves toward, we got to save his life, we got to save his life, we got to save a life, instead of, what does this person want to do? Do they want to lie in a nursing home for another 6 months? Or would they rather pass away now with their family around them, knowing who they are and not in pain? And I know you and I have talked about this, you know, that we have family members who are well over 75 and are still creating and going, you know, writing letters and awesome people. And it's not as if anyone is wishing anyone to die. And that is the hateful comments that Zeke Emanuel has gotten of, you know, this is death panels and you're just an Obamacare and blah, blah. Yeah, it's just ugly.
It's like Logan's Run. You're going to kill
Internet is an ugly place. Yeah. And he got really personal and talked about decisions he's making for his life about, for instance, he's not going to have a colonoscopy after 75. He's not going to go through that.
No.
Because if he gets colon cancer, he wants medical marijuana.
Yeah.
All the opiates that you can give him to alleviate his pain, and he wants to pass away.
Right.
And that's a decision that a lot of doctors, it's interesting, it's a lot of doctors making these decisions for themselves because they know, you talked about how the sausage is made, they know, how much suffering they can personally create by keeping an old person alive longer than the body really wants to stay alive.
But, and here's the thing, I bet if Zeke Emanuel breaks his arm,
he's
going to want to put a cast on it.
Yeah.
Well,
he said that. He said, look, if I got a treatable form of cancer now and the prognosis was good, I'd have treatment.
Exactly.
I'm 57. I'd have treatment. When I'm 80, I know that the odds are high that I may be having mini strokes or early onset or late onset Alzheimer's, as one in three people do at 80.
Yeah.
You know, you're rolling the dice and saying, look, I have to make these decisions now. And I'm all for that. I'm all for making. And that doesn't mean you can't make the decision, Sarah Palin, to write down on that piece of paper, I want you to take every step.
Of course not.
You can to save my life. I don't want to be in a death panel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and leave it at that. That's your decision. You've decided. I want extreme measures taken to preserve my life. And then we'll put you. We'll put you on all these machines and you'll be on machines for until, you know, the machines don't work anymore. But and that, you know, I hate to sound judgmental to someone that wants to do that. It is your choice if you make the choice and make it consciously. And there are ways to do that and that are set up. And you can have a living will at the hospital closest to your home. That would be the one you would most likely end up in. I mean, everyone knows someone who has wound up in a nursing home, I think, at this point. Everyone our age knows someone who's wound up in a nursing home or wound up
in a hospice and wound up...
Or wound up in the hospital for months instead of passing away right at the beginning of their heart attack or their stroke or their illness, and the hospital has kept them alive in the hospital for months.
Right.
For what? You know, in a lot of pain. So we've all seen that. Yeah.
This is something that I would, if I had one big wish, other than, of course, we all live forever, because it is a very American thing.
And he says that
we are immortal and that we should be immortal and nothing will ever end. The oceans will never run out. The air will never run out. The forests will never run out. The fossil fuels will never run out. And we can just keep using things up as fast as we like, as much as we like, because either they're endless because we're special.
Mm-hmm.
Or God will somehow come down and make it all right. You know, God will not let this planet perish. But things end.
Mm-hmm.
Everything ends. Life ends. It's an incredibly small-d democratic process. Everybody dies. It's very universal and very fair in a larger sense. So there's a couple of billion years that you're not here, and then you're here for a short time. There's several billion you're not here. And whether you believe in God or not, or whether you're an atheist or not, the quality of life that you have here, what you do here, is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really important from climate change to end-of-life care, and there's 20 other issues I could name, that we be able to have grown-up conversations about these things.
Yeah.
And
yep.
That we be able to say, look, and this is why if I had one big wish, it would be a no slippery slope zone around these fucking discussions.
Well, you know, it's just a slippery slope to death panels, and
it is.
Obama wants to kill us anyway, you so I don't understand why you want to do that.
And I don't want to move away from this topic.
No, that's fine.
But I caught this little interview with Bob Costas on the Lawrence O'Donnell show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not the one he had, I think, yesterday. We're doing this on Wednesday night. It wasn't the one yesterday where he talked about child abuse that got a very big play. That Lawrence O'Donnell does this, like everybody does, this little after bit where he videotapes people after they are done being guests because everyone always has more to say.
Yeah.
But Bob Costas talked about gun control. He said, look, the National Transportation Bureau, the National Automobile Association doesn't, you know, we have all these laws about safety belts and airbags, and you can't text while you drive, you can't talk while you drive, and you can't drive 300 miles an hour, and there's all kinds of things
you can't play
do.
Words with friends while the pilot's taking off.
Right. Well, no, this is in a car.
Yeah, okay. He's just talking about cars. Okay.
Talking about cars. You're in a car. Yeah, you're driving along. There's all kinds of things you can't do in a car. You got to wear a safety belt, and you have to. And there's lots of things that restrict your movement.
Mm-hmm.
But the AAA or whoever isn't saying, well, this is just a slippery slope to taking our cars away from us, because what the liberals, what the communists really want is for us all to ride horses and buggies. Nobody.
The pro-driver lobby isn't out there saying freedom. I want freedom from seat belts.
If we allow one car to have one seat belt, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to fascism. No, it's a dangerous thing that we need to use.
Saves lives to do that.
And it will save lives. But you can't have that discussion because there's someone involved with a lot of money who would very much like to see lots of Americans die by handgun violence.
Mm-hmm.
The National Rifle Association.
That doesn't rate... that does not rate his clients losing money. Right. No. Right.
And so we cannot have an intelligent grown-up conversation about gun control because there is a large group of well-funded people who are dedicated to making sure we don't have a well-funded conversation. Mm-hmm. And when you go down the list, you start looking at all the issues where I don't want to force you to believe what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But I really would like to have a cost-benefit discussion, an intelligent, calm grown-up discussion about climate change and voting rights and health care and how we govern ourselves and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to notice that there's basically one group of people that are blocking everything.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have an intelligent conversation in this country about gun control because of conservatives. You can't have an intelligent conversation about climate change because of conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have an intelligent conversation about reforming government because of conservatives. Deficits, conservatives. Any discussion of health care at all because Barack Obama is a communist. And he wants
to and end-of-life care in particular, which, by the way, the movement toward what Sarah Palin called death panels, which was reimbursing doctors for the work they do to have end-of-life conversations with families and to make plans with patients, that was spearheaded by the American Medical Association, who wanted their doctors to start to have – they said, look, you want to do cost-cutting, man?
Yeah.
Have conversations with people while they're healthy, while they're conscious, while they're active, while they're mentally alert.
Uh-huh.
What do you want? You know, and fill out a form. And how do you want this to be? If you have a massive stroke, do you want us to resuscitate you or not?
Right.
You know, you're 94 and you're lying in a nursing home. Do you want us to resuscitate you or not? And that's your decision. You can make it either way, yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandmother didn't want to be resuscitated. She was 94. She was in exactly that situation where she could not get out of bed for fear of breaking a bone. She was so frail. And she had do not resuscitate signs all over her nursing home room because it was her choice that if I have a stroke or a heart attack, I want to go. Thank you very much. Goodbye. I want to go.
Well, and defeating death,
mm-hmm.
the idea of beating was a very different calculus when people had, albeit somewhat illegitimate, but often haunting fears of being buried alive, for example. Once upon a time, you could buy a thing called a safety coffin. Wow. Which is where you woke up and you're underground and you ring a little bell going, hey, guess what? I'm not dead. You should get me out of here. Because it was, you know, it was a mirror under your mouth and he's not breathing. And you show signs of you're not up and running. So you're probably dead. And best to get you in the ground quickly before you start stinking the place
up. I'm feeling much better.
and which that entire phobia is basically the subtext of every single thing Edgar Allan Poe ever wrote.
Yeah.
Waking up and you're in the grave and there's no way out, or being walled up or whatever. But that's, look how much things have changed. Now people are afraid of being kept alive.
Yeah.
Now people are terrified that mindless technology.
The medical industrial complex will come in and hook you up to a machine forever.
It's going to put you in whatever the opposite of a grave is.
Yep.
And you're going to be trapped in there.
Mm-hmm.
Until you run out of money. You know, the Monty Python sketch about there's nothing wrong with you that an expensive operation can't prolong.
Exactly.
And people who are professionals know this is coming.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Like climate change, you see where I'm sort of not transitioning, but I'm
you're consolidating.
You can have an intelligent, grown-up conversation now and mitigate the worst of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going to be bad, just like everybody's going to die. Hate to break it to you, everybody's going to die. Mm-hmm. But you can have a grown-up conversation with all the facts on the table and all the things you're going to have to do to make this situation come out better than the best possible case, because all the good options are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a series of poor options. You have some that are bad and uncomfortable, some which are terrifying and awful. And you can have a grown-up conversation about that. Or you can do what Republicans do, which is say, la, 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 no, I'm going to live forever. Everything is fine. And
drill, baby, drill.
There is no climate change. What we need to do is squeeze the earth a little harder. Take a little more out of its guts. Take a little more coal out. Squeeze that last drop of oil out.
And go to war for it if we have.
And go to war for it. Yeah. Well, that's where our wars are now. They're all in places where there's oil.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a grown-up conversation. You could say, look, it's going to take a while to get off fossil fuels. We should have started 20 years ago. We should have started when Carter tried to start it.
Mm-hmm.
But Reagan came along, and we decided that we were going to live forever, and everything was going to be great all the time, and we could have all the things we wanted, and it wouldn't cost anything. But we see where that's gotten us. So let's try to fix that. Except, of course, there are people who don't see that it's gotten us anyplace but happier.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are very happy with that delusion, and they don't want to be awakened from it. So my solution, which I've mentioned here before, not a solution, but an approach anyway, is every dollar you spend on the Pentagon, you spend another dollar on alternative energy research and building infrastructure for making solar panels and making windmills, making tidal, all the renewable stuff, all the stuff that takes advantage of the Earth's natural cycles or what's happening, streaming in from space.
And you create good manufacturing jobs in places that will be displaced by changing over from fossil fuels. So these jobs are going to be in West Virginia and Kentucky.
Look, if the cost of doing business in this world can be mitigated by getting out of fossil fuels and quit having wars over them,
mm-hmm.
the best way to do that is to spend a big chunk of money getting as much technology as fast as we can up to speed. And if you can come up with carbon sequestration technology, that's great. Terrific. But we're going to spend an ass load of money. We're going to spend a ton of money, your tax money, getting us off of fossil fuels. But we can't have that conversation because the minute you say that.
Polluters don't want to pay. Well, and ExxonMobil doesn't want to pay taxes.
The minute you say that, it's Solyndra.
It's Solyndra,
you know, Barack Obama's.
He already flushed our tax money down the toilet with Solyndra. You know he did.
You know, it doesn't work. And again, you can. It is impossible to have an intelligent conversation with someone who is fundamentally incompetent as a citizen.
Or simply has an agenda of upending the game board the minute you start talking about it. Yeah.
Well, and this is where John Stewart went full drift class.
Mm-hmm.
His little heart. He started talking about climate change, and he really, really lost it. He just was, are you fucking kidding me? Do we have to go back to third grade science to explain to you people? And he took out a glass of water and some ice and just
And you really ought to watch this and if you haven't seen it. Yeah.
But his premise was there aren't two sides to this story.
There are not both sides.
There are not two sides. Yep. There's one side, which is facts and science, and then there's this other side full of moron congressmen who believe that the wobbling of the earth is – you didn't factor that in, and you got to factor that in, and I can't listen to you. Or who believe that the 12,000, 20,000 scientists worldwide who all agree this is a problem are all being bought off by big research dollars. You know, that's why they're really doing it. He said, look.
As if the congressmen aren't being bought off by Coke. Well,
if they were really bribable – you don't think the Koch brothers would have thrown $100 million at them to tell them to shut up? I mean, they could have outbid any research grant.
Yep.
By the way, why are you more credible because what you do professionally as opposed to as a hobby? Mm-hmm. And then meanwhile, the congressmen are coming up with these really just insultingly stupid explanations why it's neater, neater, I don't have to listen to you. There are both sides to this. And why are you shoving your agenda down my throat? And then you look at their contributions. Mm-hmm. The people who pay them are all oil and coal companies, all of them.
And I don't like Driftglass. I don't like Thought Police. I don't like the idea of telling someone you cannot have any opinion about climate change except for mine. I don't like that kind of forcing. On the other hand, if you are talking to someone who's coming up with theories like the earth wobbles and that's what makes the temperature change, you has nothing to do with pollution, mm-hmm. you're talking to a corrupt person.
Right.
This person is taking money to say that directly from polluters. And this is why I don't even get into conversations anymore about climate change, because for me, that's settled science. But it's also too big and scary to talk about with a lot of people that are average people. They expect that there would be such a significant drop in their quality of living.
Right.
If they had, you know, I can't afford solar panels on my house, and their minds are just closed to
down. And then
giving up any creature comforts in order to save the planet. That's just too big a problem. Huh. And so I always turn the conversation to clean air, clean water, clean land, safe food. Those are the things that people say, yeah, I believe that every person in this country should be able to turn on a faucet and drink water out of that faucet.
Yes.
That is just a right that we should have in this country as a human right. We should be able to drink the water out of our faucets, period. And breathe the air as well. I mean, that's just something that there needs to be an EPA. You need to have it measured, how much pollution is in the air. And if it's too much, it's got to be reduced, period.
Well,
and those are things people can – this is why fracking is such a big deal to people, because it really hits them at home.
Uh-huh.
And you can get people motivated to do something about it. And when you do that, Driftglass, climate change also gets affected by cleaning up the air and the water and the land and having safe food.
And you can do stuff up to a point.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I don't appreciate the fact that, you know, the Rockefellers have divested from.
Yeah, exactly.
This is just such an amazing story. The Rockefellers have divested from fossil fuels.
Right.
That is the mountain leaving Muhammad.
Right.
Getting up and leaving Muhammad.
It's like the Cash family divesting from country music. It just what?
It blows your mind. Yes.
And there are things you can do. There are things that, and those things make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to require big government, global action.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. I agree. If you're talking to someone who is making up fairy tales, who's just repeating oil industry talking points and saying that science is debatable, and they're elected officials, they are corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
But they're corrupt in a very specific way. I've mentioned before that in the spring in Chicago every year is the annual perp walk, where the people who are going to jail from City Hall are walking across the federal building.
Once the snow melts, they can walk the perps out.
We have a cookout. You know, it's very social. It's like a parade. But I am used to corruption. I have seen corrupt politicians up close. And, you know, insurance scams and auto scams and extortion and so forth are bad. Selling out your species and your planet is – there's a special category in hell for people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Really deep, deep way – I think the lowest circle of hell, I believe, according to Dante, is those who betray the public trust.
Yep.
And if you are making shit up to keep burning fossil fuel a little bit longer so that you so that your check clears.
Yeah.
You're betraying the public trust at such a deep existential level.
I would like to apologize to the CEO of BP for saying how deep in hell he's going to wind up.
And but behind that, behind Congressman Wobble and Congressman Cowfarts and Congressman whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
There are millions and millions of ordinary stupid people who are being told every day by Rush Limbaugh and every day by Sean Hannity and every day by Fox News that what they're listening to is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
That the liberals are making it up, that it's all a big scam. That and, you know, it's three mouse clicks away from finding the truth. They don't want to know.
No.
And again, this is why you can't have a grown-up adult conversation as long as there is a Republican Party, because they are fanatically dedicated to making sure that they fuck up everything they touch, that they break everything they touch.
For money.
For
they
money.
Have a motive. It's
they
not
do.
They don't get up and say, I want to do evil. They get paid to do this. Yeah. Well,
they get paid to do it, but the rank and file, the people
well, the rank and file are also told that they are being good Christians.
Sure.
And preserving, you know, their standard of living. By doing this. So, and you don't want to kill babies, do you? So you can't vote Democrat because that's just being baby killers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing. If there were a golden moment between the time that the last lie collapsed and the mm-hmm. next lie kicked in, where you could say, look, do you see what's happening right at this moment? Mm-hmm. A minute ago, you were saying something that is not true, that the Iraq war is a success, that George Bush is a great president, that deficits don't matter, or there'll never be deficits, et cetera. And I'm cheating now because I'm basically quoting David Brooks from the last decade. and you're saying all these things that have now at this moment we're together here right now are falling apart, are categorically untrue. Can you in this moment free your mind enough to acknowledge that you were wrong? And the answer is, of course not, mm-hmm. because I'm a conservative mm-hmm. and my brain isn't wired to acknowledge the fact that you are right, liberal, and I am wrong. My brain is wired to always believe I'm right and always believe that whenever anything goes wrong, it's because some secret commie liberal plot made it go wrong or because some undeserving poor people want to take my money. And because those people are impenetrably stupid, and because there's so many of them, and because there is a media devoted to feeding them and making them dumber and dumber and mm-hmm. angrier to win elections, mm-hmm. until that cycle is broken, we're screwed. Because those people they can't do anything. They can't create anything. They can't dream up a public policy that's good for anybody. But they can stop everything in its tracks.
Yep. Yep.
And as long as people who stop the rest of us in their tracks have the power to do that, we're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of which.
Well, I was just thinking, too, about how you mentioned the chicken bone in the throat of our societal progress.
Same
That's exactly what it is.
The
same people
again.
Over and over again. So there you go. I want to talk a little bit about Andrew Sullivan.
Oh, okay.
And deficits. I want you were just mentioning deficits.
Yeah. Well,
and apparently going to war doesn't contribute to the deficit, Driftglass, when you're a Republican.
Not one nickel. Or it doesn't matter. It is weird. I mean, watching Andrew Sullivan contort himself. He has now fully decamped himself from the conservative movement. Now he lives on Libertarian Island, the island of lost boys, because he's basically 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to have his cake and eat it, too. He wants to have his tantrums. He doesn't want to admit liberals are right and he was wrong.
He doesn't want you going after his career, Driftglass.
Right. He wants you to understand that he's sincere in all the stupid shit he believes. Which is fine. But once you discover that what you have believed in the past was wrong, and once you have learned that the people who were trying to tell you that you were wrong were right, you sort of owe it to yourself and your soul and your conscience and your
job. Not to mention your audience.
to mention the fact that it wasn't that I sort of fucked up. It's that those guys over there were right. And maybe I shouldn't be ripping into them every single time they open their mouth. Maybe liberals aren't as bad as conservatives. Maybe it really is kind of one-sided now. Maybe 50 years from now, this will be different. Probably will be. But for right now, there's pretty much one side of almost every argument that's wrong. And pretty much one side that's almost always right, or at least moving in the right direction. And it would behoove Andrew Sullivan to quit inventing straw men on the left. And I'm talking to you, and I'm talking to David Brooks, and I'm talking to all the rest of them. Quit lying about liberals. That would be very helpful. That would be a good thing you could do. So Andrew Sullivan has begun to suspect, provisionally, it's possible, the Republicans aren't 100% serious about deficit reduction. And this is this is hat tip to Batocho, the friend of our blog and a good guy all around.
And a great blogger over at Vagabond Scholar, yes.
Who sent this article from Mother Jones my way, which is Kevin Drum basically commenting about Andrew Sullivan. Because there is a circle of people who all do talk to each other. And, you know, it's Michael Tomasky talks to Kevin Drum, talks to Andrew Sullivan. And we're not in that circle. The article is by Andrew Sullivan. Does the GOP really give a shit about the debt? ? And the Kevin Drum article is, of course they don't. They've never cared. Republicans don't. They've never cared about.
Look at them and what they voted for.
At no point in history, in the last 50 years, have Republicans ever really given a shit. They've sincerely been reprogrammed to pretend they care about deficits.
Well, and to use deficit hawkishness to get their agenda passed.
Yeah, which is getting rid of social programs for people that are less fortunate.
And cutting taxes for rich people and pretending that that's going to generate revenue.
But
yes.
You cannot look at the peaks and valleys of deficit creation and reduction over the last 50 years. Reagan Bush skyrocketing, Clinton brings down. George Bush outdoes Reagan. And then in comes Barack Obama, and you find that the counter cycle to that is Republicans caring about deficits. Mm-hmm. Republicans never give a shit about deficits when Reagan was president. They never give a shit about deficits when George Bush was president. Dick Cheney famously said, Reagan taught us deficits don't matter. What? The only time Republicans care about deficits is when there is a Democrat in the White House. Mm-hmm. And they can use their pretend concern, their fake concern about deficits, to make people feel that they need to get rid of social programs to somehow balance the budget that they trashed. But of course, now there's a war. So apparently we're not having that conversation now because now we're going to war again, or we're back at war, or we're still at war. But it's a switch that goes off in their head. There's a moment when deficits are the worst thing in the world, and there's a moment when deficits don't matter at all. And
what I find particularly nauseating is that bombing another country is essential to our national security, but providing food to our school children isn't.
Yeah, well.
And that's, it makes no sense to me.
Well, it does. It does. And all you need to go.
Because they're lazy. Those children are lazy.
Exactly. You need to go no further than House Speaker John Boehner.
Yeah.
It is ideologically and psychologically and morally impossible for conservatives to acknowledge reality at this point. They're in so deep. They are in hock to reality so far. They can't acknowledge it. They have to keep doubling their bet. They have to. They're too far in to walk it back. So you end up with John Boehner, according to Paul Krugman, last week he explained to an audience at where else? Let's take a wild guess. Anybody want to guess? Was it the American Enterprise Institute? No, it wasn't. No, it was the American Enterprise Institute, because it's always the fucking American Enterprise Institute. When you dig through all the 144 point font screaming eagle emails you've ever gotten from anybody who's a conservative in your life, you will find that every fucking one of them is from some NRA website, or the American Enterprise Institute, or Sean Hannity, or Rush Limbaugh, or Ben Carson.
I agree with Rush Limbaugh when he says, I'm the face of the Republican Party.
It's the truest thing he's ever said.
You left out the Heritage Foundation.
Yes. Well, they're like the
little brother. They're there too, yes.
But it's the same pool of polluted, closed, as I've described, this is a bell jar full of beer farts. And they've been rebreathing Rush Limbaugh's beer farts for a quarter century now. And now they literally don't know what fresh air smells like.
Yeah.
That's why they think the media is controlled by liberals. Because the media doesn't spend, the rest of the media, although it's complicit and corrupt, does not spend every hour of every day regurgitating Rush Limbaugh's lower intestinal tract. And that's what they think facts look like and smell like and taste like. So it just sounds like there's a big liberal conspiracy not to talk about Benghazi. And so we're back to the American Enterprise Institute, which is, of course, where John Boehner was talking. And he said, have this idea that I really don't have to work. I don't really want to do this. I'd rather just sit around. Now,
where have we heard that before? Yeah.
every fucking
47% anybody. Yeah.
Well, and he actually he does what we do here on the professional left, and what lots of, I think, really serious people who are really concerned about this psychotic party that we have to deal with. It's like being chained to a lunatic. Mm-hmm. I would love for them to go off and be on their own and go with God, but they drag us down with them. Their insanity will kill us all. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of important that we either detach them from us and get them away from us, or sequester them in some way that makes them harmless, or sober them up. And so we all have the same problem. How do you reach people who have said, rule one, I am unreachable?
Yeah, but, you know, I think you need to triage, and you have triage, and the triage is the first thing you have to do is staunch the bleeding uh-huh. from both sides.
From the centrists yeah. have to go.
That's the source of the hemorrhage right now.
Scratch a conservative.
Of truth, yeah.
Every single conservative, every time, I can say categorically, 100% of the time, every conservative I've ever debunked, the first words out of their mouth were about the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. They have been taught, like trained SEALs, that when you're caught, never admit you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Never admit you made a mistake. Never admit liberals were right, because that's impossible. That's just impossible. Always say, well, yeah, but Rachel Maddow is just as bad.
Both sides, you know. Both sides have bad things.
So Paul Krugman has the same problem we do, which is how do you reach – what the hell is wrong with these people? What really – what the fuck is their problem? And he muses that it might be race because, you know, black people are scary and brown people are moochers. And, you know, there's an awful lot of problems. There's a real clear overlap between racism and the Republican Party.
Yep.
I'm not saying it's 100%. I'm just saying that if you're looking for racists – and you're trying to do it a one-stop shop.
If you're a racist, that's what Bill Maher said. It's not that all Republicans are racist, but if you're a racist, chances are you're a Republican.
But he sort of says that might be it. But his guess is, however, it's mainly about the closed information loop of the modern mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. In a nation where the Republican base gets what it thinks are facts from Fox mm-hmm. News and Rush Limbaugh, where the party's elite gets what it imagines to be policy analysis from the American Enterprise Institute of the Heritage Foundation. Whatever the explanation, Mr. Boehner was clearly saying what he and everyone around him really thinks.
Yep.
What they say to each other when they don't expect others to hear. The people I call the tribe that rubs shit in their hair.
Mm-hmm.
They do it.
And you know, if I looked good in a sleeveless mini dress and I could tie everything you just said into Benghazi.
Yes.
I would be hired by Roger Ailes.
Then I could be one of John Boehner's lazy people. I just want to sit around and have my wife bring home huge checks from Fox News. That's all I want to do.
Yeah. Hey, Driftglass, we are running out of time here.
Oh, okay.
Could you talk to us a little bit about, we're doing this for our own amusement. But we also find it entertaining to talk about the Illinois governor's race. Pat Quinn is our governor, and he is running for re-election as a populist.
Yeah.
He's running on the minimum wage, raise the minimum wage.
Yep.
And help out working people. Always celebrate the achievements of African-American youth in jobs programs and in community building programs, and he has a YouTube come out every other day where he's meeting with young people and standing in front of a podium talking about how great they are and isn't it wonderful that this town has done this, and it's all very positive, and it's definitely directed towards working people in a populist way.
Usually sweating with his sleeves rolled up.
Well, he is not glamorous.
No, he's not.
And I like that about him.
He's got anti-charisma.
He's got anti-charisma in a good way. And yeah. You know that he's there when he says, you know, I think people who work 40 hours a week ought to be able to not be in poverty no more.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he doesn't say no more, but anymore. He means it.
Yeah.
He really thinks that that's logical. So he did a very good job on Up with Steve Kornacki last weekend.
He did.
Really, Kornacki was asking him about some corruption in Chicago that he might be connected to in some way. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he handled the questions very well. I really do. On the other hand, the Republican candidate for governor has a few problems.
He does.
And why don't you tell us, particularly, I want to hear the Capital Facts story.
Oh, sure.
Let me explain to people. Capital Facts is a website run by Rich Miller. Is that right?
Yes. Rich Miller.
Rich Miller. He used to run it as a fax, an actual fax
yep.
of news stories to legislators and other interested people. doing real shoe leather reporting out of the state capital of Illinois, which is here in Springfield.
He did what you would want journalists to do. He just and it became what I would, you know, in a better universe, Politico would be.
Yeah.
An actual on the ground reporting of, you know, who's doing what and who's talking to who and who's going to dinner with who and who's caucusing with who and
Well, you know, Luke Russert does have an inside track with Speaker Boehner.
He does. He sits on his lap and calls him uncle.
But this is different. This is actually very different. Really finding out where bills are, what's going on, who's talking to whom, and reporting on it. And it transferred into a blog. It became a blog as blogs came into existence.
Yeah.
He abandoned the fax machine.
Shame.
Our youngest child at the dinner table asked, "What is fax? What is a fax machine?" At table the other night.
That's adorable.
It was adorable.
It was a magic machine.
And you had to explain Baud.
Yeah. What's that?
And she came up with her own about, why didn't you just email people?
Yeah. We tried.
Yeah, it was great. But he is involved with receiving, I wonder if he received them by fax, some press releases.
Oh,
from
he gets them all the time.
The Republican candidate for governor, Bruce Rauner, who, go ahead and tell this story.
Well, I will just say I'm on his blog roll.
Okay.
Or it was the last time I checked.
All right.
I used to write a lot of stories about Chicago politics. Mm-hmm. I might do that again someday. But he found a few of them to be salient and interesting and linked to me a few times. And I went on his blog roll, so bless his heart. He said, I didn't know the Quinn campaign was embroiled in some horrible anti-Semitism scandal. I never heard of it until the Bruce Rauner people told me about it twice in one day.
Wow.
And it was this sort of blaring headline about the entanglement of the Quinn administration in a horrible anti-Semitism something, something, something. But it wasn't a headline from any place. It was one that the Rauner people had invented, which reeks of desperation. So he was interested, and it was this story about how and you drill down 1/4 inch below the headline, which is, again, a fake headline invented by a campaign staffer. And it turns out that there's a guy at the University of Illinois who has been the job offer for him to become a full tenured professor at that university has been withdrawn.
Yeah, and my understanding is it's sort of like you shake hands on the job, but once your background check comes in,
yes,
we'll give you the job.
Yes.
And it wasn't a background check, but it was a handshake. We'll sign the contracts later. We intend to hire you.
Yeah.
If everything turns out okay.
Now go
that
pee.
That kind
this
of
cup.
Thing. Yeah.
Here's a cop. Go pee. Oh, look, it's full of anti-Semitism. You can't have the job. Yeah. He was. He had resigned his job and moved his wife to Illinois, and then they found that he was on the Twitter.
He was on the Twitter. Yeah.
And as very much like Cliven Bundy has many things to say about the Negro.
He had many things to say about the Jew, not just about Israel. Now, you know, you and I have political feelings about how Israel behaves in the modern international geopolitical world that not everyone, not all of our listeners would agree with.
Right.
That wasn't the issue here.
No, he
wasn't just saying, you know, Israel ought to make peace or Israel ought to do this that.
No.
This was much more hate.
Yeah.
Hate speech.
And there was this moment where this was protested. The decision was protested. And it's a freedom of speech and university issue. And we're going to do a whole segment on colleges in a week or two. There's a whole bunch to talk about colleges. But he didn't have the job. He didn't have a tenured position from which he could say these things. He just was saying them on his own dime. And what's more, it's just a job offer.
Yeah.
And what's more, university didn't have a problem with some of them, but some of the rest of them really crossed the line.
Yeah.
I said, no, we really can't have you working here. That just is not going to work for anybody. Mm-hmm. So the vote was like 8-1 that, no, we're not going to extend this offer to you. We're really sorry. And now there's a controversy because, you know, he's
going to sue.
He's probably going to sue. And I'm not sure if he has much of a case, but that's the story. That's the whole story. Mm-hmm. So how is this the Quinn anti-Semitism scandal? Well, I will tell you. Apparently, because Pat Quinn did not explicitly come out and endorse the decision to deny him his position, he's part of the anti-Semitic conspiracy.
Because he didn't come out. Because
it didn't.
And say, oh, yeah, this guy shouldn't have been hired. He didn't.
I agree 100% with this decision. To, yeah. And that qualifies him as being anti-Semitic. Well, anti-Semitism is a bomb you drop into a campaign. Now you're throwing firebombs. This is how desperate they are. And there are a lot of other things going on in Illinois other than one guy not getting a job. Right. So I'm guessing it just didn't show up on their radar. But when the Quinn campaign finally, or the Quinn administration finally answered, said, yeah, he agrees with it, he sits on the board. So there you go. And this isn't really a story about that hiring decision.
Whether
it was good or not, or bad or not. I mean, it's not a secret. You know, he was denied the job. And I don't know if he sits on the board or the hiring board or whatever. I'm not sure where he is. But he is sort of... he is part of the university structure, or was, and he's, you know, so of course I support
it. So he supports it. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Duh. But this complete non-issue that had nothing to do with the Quinn administration became the Quinn anti-Semitism scandal because they need to make some shit up. Because
and so they were trying to get Capital Facts to cover this hot story and throw up a Drudge siren over it. Yeah. And
Oh, they got him to cover it all right. But they intended.
Look at how desperate the Rounder campaign is.
And speaking of Chad Grimm.
Chad Grimm, the libertarian independent candidate for governor of Illinois. Yes.
Last year, we introduced you to the musical stylings of one Chad Grimm, who is the libertarian candidate for governor in the state. On the theory that it certainly looked like our working theory that libertarians, most libertarians, are basically Republicans running away from the Bush administration and hiding in the bushes because they don't want to take any responsibility for it. So now they call themselves libertarians. Seems to be borne out by the fact that the 5 or 6% of the vote that Chad Grimm might or might not get at the election will be overwhelmingly Republican voters.
Yeah, shaved off almost entirely from the Rauner people.
He's militantly pro-gun. He's sick of this war on guns. He wants no taxes, no income taxes. He wants government cut. He's a libertarian, except in a good light, if you squint, you can't really tell the difference between him and a Republican.
Well, so, and it doesn't help that the candidate that the Republican Party has is Bruce Rauner, who's doing a really bad job.
He's not good.
Of distinguishing himself as nothing but a billionaire who wants to cut taxes for other billionaires. And by the way, at one time he actually said in public he doesn't like the minimum wage.
Yeah, so, all. Shouldn't have it all. So, if you squint, you see Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you run Mitt Romney for governor of Illinois? I don't know. But this happens a lot. He has a lot of money and he thinks he has good ideas. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people around him who have a lot of money who would like him to get in there and fix Springfield.
Cut their taxes. Yeah.
Cut taxes, right. You know, and fire a bunch of state employees, and cut their pensions because paying people, who've worked for 30 years, a decent pension is apparently, worse than, I don't
Hitler,
know.
Hitler. ISIS, Hitler.
And not to say that Illinois is not in bad shape, but Illinois is in bad shape because for a long time, the government didn't put aside money that it promised it would.
Yeah.
Under a lot of different administrations, it was always easier.
And a lot of other states have this problem as well. Yeah. So
apparently Chad Grimm, he realizes he has little chance. This is from the local paper. Little chance of winning, but he could play a significant role in deciding who does. Apparently, the Illinois Republicans have used party attorneys and private investigators to try to get him knocked off the ballot.
Wow.
And while the effort has been unsuccessful so far, Grimm said it's cost him nearly $100,000 in legal fees, exhausting his war chest and limiting his campaign ability.
So he's actually spending money that he should be spending,
apparently,
promoting himself.
Now, he could be making that up. I don't know. It's just a quote from a guy in the paper. But what is
if I was a political attorney, I'd be trying to get some of that sweet, sweet Rauner money and telling Rauner, if you don't do everything you can in court to get this guy off the ballot, you're in big. I'd constantly be pushing for another check for that sweet, sweet money.
Yeah, well, that's how close the election is.
Yeah.
And that's how much money is at stake here. I mean, Bruce Rauner is a very, very, very rich man.
Well, and let's be clear. One of the reasons it's close is that Pat Quinn took the fiscally responsible tact of raising taxes.
Yes.
And state taxes, I couldn't believe when I moved here that state income tax was 3%.
Yeah.
It was really Alabama low. Rates.
It's really low. Which is why.
And he moved it up to 5%.
Which is why, if you listen in the in every campaign ad, you never hear the actual number.
You
hear the percentage.
Yeah.
He nearly doubled your taxes. Yeah, right, he went from 3% to 5%.
5%.
Because the state was broke and we couldn't pay our bills. And there was nothing left to cut. So, yeah, he did that.
He did
And then, of course, the rest of the commercials are about how awful all the liberal Democrats are for supporting this.
Yes.
I got to say that the funniest campaign commercials are the Andy Menard.
The anti-Andy Menard. There's this guy, Andy Menard. He's running for state senate down here in southern Illinois south central Illinois.
And he's going places. I hear around the water cooler, he's going places. I'm just saying.
And for some reason, he has been chosen as the really bad hate ads will go against Andy Menard. But the one I want to talk about, and then I want you to talk about yours, but the one I want to talk about is the one that mentions Andy Menard's name like 9 or 10 times in a 30-second spot.
Yeah.
And there's this washed-over black-and-white picture of Andy Menard sitting in an investigative committee.
Yes.
On that committee, and he is taking notes.
Yes.
At the committee desk. He's sitting, in session. The committee is in session. He's sitting there. Andy Menard sat in this commission where they were investigating corruption in Chicago, and he didn't open his mouth once. No condemnation for corruption from Andy Menard. He just kept his mouth shut. Andy Menard doesn't care about corruption. And there's this picture of him in the hearing, taking notes, being a state senator, actually doing his job. And you don't hear his opposing candidate's name. I didn't hear it in that ad.
No.
It's an attack ad against Andy Menard. And you get name recognition. You get to see him at work.
Uh-huh. Taking notes.
And then there's this really ugly voice in the background. Andy Menard doesn't care about corruption. And there's no proof that he did anything except sit in this committee and take notes.
Well, this is the thing that makes me believe deep in my heart that I'm missing out on a lot of money. Because as a writer.
You mean as a writer of campaign commercials?
Yeah. I mean, I look at these things and the video's nice and you can do all kinds of fun things with scary faces and music. But it's words in a row. That's all it is. Words in a row with period, with punctuation marks and so forth. And the way these ads are written are so incompetent. It is like an 8-year-old wrote them.
Yeah.
And then they were never edited. Just whatever that 8-year-old thought, we're going to shoot that. So there's, Andy Menard, he even supported Obamacare. Well, yeah, he did. And he's a Democrat. And you know what? That's going to come back to haunt you so bad.
Yeah.
That's going to come back. But they're still thinking that we can run against Obamacare. Maybe he also supported in Benghazi. I don't know. But there's this other ad that I just can't figure out. It's not as bad as the sheep with the glowing red eyes. But it is Andy Menard. He's a nice guy. But that's not enough for Illinois.
And you mean they actually bring up that he's a nice guy?
Sure, he's a nice guy. But that's
why?
Us. And
why would you bring that up? I mean, that's like bringing up, look, here's a picture of him at work.
Sure, he's got a sweet ass, but what's that doing for you? Andy Menard, he's got a six-pack, but will it work for you at the state cap?
No,
and it's just, I hear his dick is 2 feet long, but Andy Menard. And, it's like, why? But it's because the people who write these are not very bright, I'm convinced. Or if there was a plan, if there was some sort of overarching strategy, other than maybe the plan is to amuse liberal podcasters to get these ads mentioned. I really don't know.
Maybe.
I could write on my worst day drunk, I could write a better ad than the Andy Menard ads. But somebody wrote them And they went through some committee process, and they were approved by the campaign.
Well,
they were
and
shot
it was filmed and then shown in a in a meeting, and they went, yeah, run that one.
Yeah.
We're going to buy space to put that on the air.
The one where it says Andy Bedard's a nice guy, but that's not enough. Yeah. That's
yeah, what I want
my campaign. That's
the one that did really well in our focus group. Yeah,
of
really?
You know, because he's not being mean or anything. He's just saying stuff.
We can't accuse him of being mean because he's not, but... Okay.
It was just weird. It struck me that that's a.
We should be able to make a lot of money writing ads for anti Andy Menard commercials, even though
we should.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Team Good has the talent and no money, and Team Evil has tons and tons of money and no talent.
As Petocchio said, Team Evil pays much
better. They pay much better. Yeah, they do.
So what? We have our contributors.
And thank you for contributing to our podcast. We deeply appreciate all of you. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is named TC, which stands for Totally Cute. He apparently wandered into the house and was let in by a babysitter who believed that this kitten must belong to them, the owners, the current owners, because, you know, he's so cute. And
yeah, we're gonna have a long conversation about
babysitter.
If that's our babysitter, we're gonna have a really long talk.
Don't let any outdoor cats in the house. And then at 4 a.m. they heard kitty peeps from behind the sofa, and voila, TC had found a forever home with us.
Wow.
He's now about 11. He's still small and full of love, but we hate to cast aspersions on internet kitties. TC is a dangerous bird hunter. He brings dead birds home for mommy and daddy. They don't know any better. Yeah. It's sad, but that's the case.
Well, they're wired. They're carnivores.
Well, and he was found outside, you know.
And he's bringing it home to the family.
I'm trying to be nice to you. Giving you a present. Yeah. So they watch him pretty carefully. And we forgive you, TC. Just... enjoy being this week's internet kitty and try to be good and resist the dominant paradigm if you can.
Yeah, yeah.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties really wish Dinesh D'Souza would stop bitching about his sentence. Because, frankly, 6 months at a budget hell is no worse than the annual National Review cruise.
Oh, my gosh. He's going to have to get a furlough to go on that National Review cruise.
He might miss it. Of course, it also might mean months off his sentence. Really? Really? You're going to be alone with Rich Lowry on a boat for a week? Oh, dude.
Catherine Jean Lopez will be at the jail knocking.
Yeah.
Let him out. Attica. Attica.
Time served. Time served, Mr. D'Souza. We had no idea this was where
you didn't know.
Yeah. It's a halfway house, but halfway to where?
Yeah. Halfway to Catherine Jean Lopez's heart.
And finally, Shana Tova to all of our...
Yes. And happy New Year and... Sure. Happy autumnal equinox to all of our listeners.
Crisp and beautiful weather here in the cornfield, and all is well. Kids are happy, busy, and, you know, recovering
from... You found a used car.
I did.
Thank you, Heather, for pointing us to a website that helped us find an affordable used car for Drift Glass.
I felt like I was...
Heather at Clicks and Liars pointed us in the right direction.
Suddenly, my inbox was full of brilliant advice from smart people.
And we also want to thank Blogginfreude.
Blogginfreude, oh, man.
Blogginfreude at Stink, STINQUE.
Yeah.
He's a gearhead.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of good advice, too.
And apparently all I owe anybody is a picture of me in front of the car. So,
a picture of the car. I thought it was... Yeah. You didn't want to see you.
No, nobody wants to see
you. You got to send a picture of the car.
Because I'm secretly Andy Menard.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University, our friend Dogface Herman, has sent us 8 songs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
A pretty song makes me bend my arms back.
Okay.
And do you know where that comes from?
I have no idea.
It's from Twin Peaks. Okay. Oh. Well, it's a mix-up of several lines from Twin Peaks. But anyway, here we are. We have these 8 songs, and they are from monster movies or science fiction sources. And the first one, he would like you to name the monster in the song. Here
we
go.
Let's do this.
Last night at the museum, they were searching for a trace of the thief who stole the mummy's bracelet from its case. And now tonight the mummy's curse is on his thieving head, for the mummy's come to life, awakened from the dead.
That has to be the mummy.
It is. It's the mummy.
Other than the mummy, the worst of all the monsters, except for zombies, because any monster you can escape walking at a normal pace in any direction other than directly at it is not terrifying. This thing didn't scare me. But I believe that's Boris Karloff.
I guess so. But it's Lee Ross singing The Mummy's Bracelet, probably with backup from Boris Karloff. And yeah, you could actually walk away from the mummy, drive down to the store, get a stick of dynamite.
Yeah.
Drive it back to, and the mummy wouldn't be that far away from where he was before.
Well, this is why women had to wear high heels and run through brambles. Because
bramble,
they would
lots
fall.
Of bramble.
Yeah.
All right, number 2, name the song and the singer.
These cats from outer space were giving their all, and I could tell the way they rocked that they were having a ball. They were coming on strong, I was clapping my hands, stopping long enough to say,
easy man.
So at twilight time, when the sun goes down, back in the woods on the edge of town, people all together from a mile around, they hear Doc and Old Purple play the crazy sounds. They go,
yeah. No idea.
It's the no Big idea. Bopper.
Oh, okay. The late, great Big Bopper.
The Big Bopper singing, "The Purple People Eater Meets the Witch Doctor." And no, that's a spinoff.
When you get a novelty song, apparently you just have to milk it to death.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. All right. Number 3, name the monster and movie.
Creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door, all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the...
The movie's The Blob. Has to be The Blob.
Has to be The Blob.
Steve McQueen launched Steve McQueen's career. Well, one of the things that launched his career.
And you won't believe this, Driftglass, but the band singing this is The Five Blobs.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was more than one, but it turns out...
The Five Blobs.
Five Blobs sang this song for the...
Later known as The Traveling Wilburys. little known fact about
little
music
fact
and
about
monsters.
The Five Blobs. They came back later as The Traveling Wilburys. Okay. Number 4, the title of this song is Alien Speak. Can you tell us what the title of the song means? And it's in the song.
Zoom, Dad, zoom.
1 hour took my baby for a ride in space.
E-I-O-I-O.
We met a little man with a funny, funny face.
E-I-O-I-O.
He taught us both to wail this way.
E-I-O-I-O.
Now nobody digs a word we say.
Well, that's the Jetsons. It has to be.
That's right. It's the Jetsons. Eep, op, work, ah. Did you know this song was covered by the Violent Femmes?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this song. And what? So what's the name of the song?
Eep, op, ook, ah.
No, I mean, what does it mean? You haven't.
Eep, op, ook, ah means I love you.
Oh, Lord. We have come a long way since those days.
John Oliver did a thing showing everyone talking about a 50-year-old TV show, The Jetsons.
Yeah. Using
a 50-year-old TV show as a metaphor.
For modern times. It's like The Jetsons. It's like we're living in The Jetsons. No, it's not. The Jetsons were the Flintstones.
Number 5. This one is, which I'm just going to give you part of the title. It's blank, blank, rock and roll.
Huh.
during a time when everything was blank, blank rock and roll.
Yeah, it could be everything.
You have to fill in the blanks. Here we go.
All right. I'm guessing it involves Cape Canaveral.
Something like that.
At some point, perhaps Tang was mentioned. I have no idea.
It's flying saucer rock and roll.
Of course. Of course it is. What else would it be? Yeah.
Flying Saucer Rock and Roll is from 1957. Billy Lee Riley and his Little Green Men sang that song. Mm-hmm. All right. Number six, Name the Monster.
Says his prayers at night, and changed when the wolf bane blooms and the full moon shining bright.
That's got to be the werewolf.
That's a werewolf, and it's by the Frantics.
Yeah.
All right, number seven. Oh,
quick bit of trivia. If you all ever get the chance to look at old, it's either Twilight Zone, no, it can't be. It's Route 66.
Mm-hmm.
There's an episode where Boris Karloff, Lon Chaney, and Peter Lorre all get together, I think just outside in Chicago, like near O'Hare, to talk about stuff. And it's incredibly funny and charming to see the actors getting together as themselves to talk about their career, because they were all really good at what they did. Lon Chaney was a very good Wolfman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Lon Chaney Jr. was a really good
Wolfman. Yeah, he really was. All right, we are now on number seven.
Seven, all right.
Name the movie. This is a movie about a time-traveling town called Pleasant Valley, kind of like Brigadoon if Brigadoon were populated with homicidal Southerners instead of charming Scotsmen. And that was Dogface Herman writing that.
Okay.
So here it goes. Name the movie.
By the way, up front, I'm going to get this wrong.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Name the movie.
Even the man whose heart is pure and says his prayers at night can change when the wolf bane blooms and the full moon shining bright.
Got no idea.
The poster from this movie is pretty spicy. It's a woman in a black bra all tied up and screaming and scared of a monster or something like that. Or a bad person. I don't know.
Or
she's in peril.
Or hillbillies.
Or hillbillies, yeah. This movie was called 2000 Maniacs, 1964. Uh-huh. And yeah, it's about a group of people coming into a town. And they are murdered one by one as revenge for the destruction of the South during the Civil War. Okay.
Wow. That has a certain weirdly modern overtone. Okay.
Number eight. This is kind of special. I'm just going to put this on and let you listen to it. Here we go.
Okay.
I scrambled up to the crest of Primrose Hill. The Martians' camp was below me. A mighty space it was. And scattered about it in their overturned machines were the Martians, dead, slain after all man's devices had failed by the humblest things upon the earth, bacteria.
Oh, my goodness. That is either Who's Afraid of Zombie Virginia Woolf?
I thought you were going to say Vagina Woolf. I was wondering where you were going with that.
No, who's Afraid of the Undead Virginia Woolf?
Yeah.
Or it's the War of the Worlds. That's Richard Burton.
That is Richard Burton.
Good
and
God.
That is Richard Burton from the War of the Worlds musical from Roller Disco 1978.
Oh, God. Thank you, Dogface Herman. You made my day. I'd always dreamed of combining H.G. Wells and Roller Disco, but I didn't think technology existed.
I didn't think you could do it with Richard Burton either. Wow.
I was wrong.
We were all wrong. You know, I think Richard Burton doing roller disco with the World of the Worlds musical has to play us out today, don't you think?
I think absolutely. I think that is the best new thing in the world.
Yeah, best new thing in the world, old thing in the world. 1978, Richard Burton. Have a great week, everybody. I love you, Driftglass.
Love you too, darling.
I scrambled up the crest of Primrose Hill. The Martian's camp was below me. A mighty space it was. And scattered about it in their overturned machines were the Martians, dead, slain after all man's devices had failed by the humblest things upon the earth. Bacteria. Minute, invisible bacteria. The invaders arrived and drank and fed. Our microscopic allies attacked them. From that moment, they were doomed.